Hello everybody, I'm Mark Fox from Grapple Arcade and BBG Wrestling. I'm joined again by my brother-in-arms, Mr. Richard Fox. How are you doing, Rich?
Oh yeah, not too bad.
Good man. We are here to chat about NWA Power. This is episode 3 in our review. I think it's best to say like a bit of an analysis, I suppose, from a fan's perspective of how things have been going. We'll be doing this each week. We've got episode 1 and 2 up on bbgwrestling.com as we speak, and on our SoundCloud and iTunes and all that malarkey. But you can get there through bbgwrestling.com. So, Rich, go straight into it, mate. Intro. Gali addresses that he is no longer allowed to talk to Camille. He said that, I won't be doing that anymore. We're here just to talk about to Nick Aldis about the championship, and that's all we'll be doing. So, it's interesting because of what actually happened later on in the show where he seemed to ignore his own advice. later on, it seemed like a bit of a pointless intro, to be honest.
Yeah, the biggest feud in NWA rages on, I think, at the moment. Garley somehow making himself the biggest personality of the entire company.
Garley versus Silence for the world title. November pay-per-view. We then head straight into Homicide. He's kicking off about the Dawson's interfering the week before. He swears a little bit because it's bleeped out, and then he swears a bit more, saying he doesn't care that he swears. I like the fact that he turned around to Jim Cornette while Jim was trying to get a bit of a spotlight. He said, I love you, Jim, but don't steal my heat. Yeah, yeah. That was a beast of a line, that.
I think this is where, as well, the studio aspect, or when you see it with the smaller promotions, we've had it ourselves when we've been to Defy, where they record a few shows all at once. It's back to back, and they say to you, so, keep it stumped, don't give away any spoilers. But if you hear a wrestler say that, next week I'm going to beat you down, and it's actually later on in that night. I think Eddie Kingston might have confused himself a little bit in it right at the beginning of the promo. He said, did you see what just happened the other week?
I know.
Talking about the Dawson's absolutely just threw me right out of the moment with it. But again, what we were saying last week is that level of passion and intensity he has when he does it. You can let him off with it because he's just so up front and in your face and what have you. Like I say, he's just so intense. He can make those little mistakes and it's all right.
It's true, and I think, well, as well as us acknowledging and appreciating Kingston's passion, as you say, the fire that he got that he brings to that promo. I mean, Cornette clearly noticed it as well, because he had that look on his face of a mixture between being scared and slightly aroused, like where he was like, all right, I won't get in your way, but please keep going.
Just gold, carry on. I think that intensity again, we let Kingston off with mistakes, and he did it as well when he was talking about the Dawsons. He says those two big bald headed freaks, forgetting that one of them has a full head of hair and
Let's just go with the flow. That's just being there at the moment, kicking off and going with it. I think that's fine. I love that. I love that there can be mistakes, but you forgive it, as you say, because it's not scripted. You know it's not scripted. It's completely raw, so it's completely allowable because he's just full of it. He's like, for it.
I'd rather have the promos like that all the time where they do fall over a little bit, or they never even fell over, made those odd little mistakes, didn't they?
Yeah.
He does it with such conviction. It's all right.
He does it while sweating intensely. Moving on to Crystal Rose against his Marty Bell. Strange match. It felt a very kind of green match. A bit of a tricky one to get into, this one. A bit of stopping and starting. I think we were both chatting about beforehand. It was difficult to really enjoy the match. I think the problem was, from my point of view, that both wrestlers, nothing against them at all, obviously, but both of them seemed like trainees, if I'm honest. And that wasn't acknowledged, so it was difficult to kind of think anything but this isn't going very well.
Utter dog shit.
Right, fair enough. You're straight up.
I thought there was a part of the Hurricane Rana where it just looked really messy, and then Marty Bell then got up after she did it as if to say, like, look what I've done to the audience, as if they should be applauding her for it. I thought it was very, very sloppy. There was a really good spot where she whipped Crystal Rose into the corner, into the turnbuckle, and then kicked her leg out from under her to make her drop down onto the floor. I thought that was really good. It was so good, in fact, she did it again 20 seconds later.
Was it Marty who did it? I thought it was Crystal who did that.
No, it was Marty. It was Marty who did it. And then, again, 20 seconds later, she repeated the spot. It's only a two-minute. It's a two-minute match. You don't need to repeat these bits and pieces. But yeah, Mio, if they are trainees, well, I'll let them off. But it was a poor match.
It wasn't, you know. It's not trying to be a criticism as such. It's just more a case of that we're expecting a level from NWA from what they've showed us so far, and that particular match just seemed a little bit. It wasn't great. It wasn't TV ready, basically, as far as I'm concerned.
I think that's exactly it. I know at the end of the day, the shows that we've had so far, a lot of people have said that it's the character building and the structure of what it is that's made it. It's not been so much the in-ring product as what it's been. The matches have been fairly short, and they haven't been, you know, Meltzer five-star matches, but there's still been a general theme of them of fairly hard-hitting, good grappling, you know, basics. I think it's sort of missing out on all of that.
It did. It missed it a bit. It did, like I say, to me, it felt like a bit of a trainee match. And you know what it is, though? If they announced on commentary that we've got a couple of our trainees out tonight, if that's what they potentially do for the first match of some of the shows that they do, I can completely get behind that, because they're giving new people a chance to do something, right? I get that. I'm absolutely on board with that. But you have to promote it as much. Now, if I, you know, find out that these two wrestlers were... Actually, they've been around for a while doing so. I don't know. I honestly don't know. But if I find out that they've been around for a while doing wrestling, and you know, this isn't the first sort of soiree on a NWA in an NWA ring, then I've got to question why they're being booked, because it wasn't very good at all. And yeah, simple as that. Hopefully it was a case of these are trainees having a go out, and it completely justifies what they're up to. A couple of the comments that. Corny made on commentary. I think it was Cornette who mentioned, or it might have actually been Garley, strongly influenced by grunge. Strongly influenced by grunge, and the way that the Cornette, well, the finisher for me was clearly a slight variation of a pedigree, but Cornette decided to call it a Pearl River Plunge.
Yeah, Pearl River Plunge it was not.
It wasn't a Pearl River Plunge, Corny. It was a pedigree. But either way, you know, best of luck to both of them, and I hope they can put better matches on going forward, because the cameras are on them. It's as simple as that. And, you know, hopefully we can see a better outcome from them. Maybe it's a simple fact of that they both need to be against a slightly more experienced, better talent. If we saw one of those wrestlers against the champion, for example, then we might get a better understanding of what they're able to do. But anyway, without dwelling on that too much, we'll move on to the Dawson's promo with Marquez, because that came up next. As we mentioned last time, mate, it was completely heelish, big nasty shit, talking smack and getting booze, exactly what you want, and just looking mint. I really like the Dawson's.
I think
a big baddie perspective.
I think there was, at the beginning of the promo, said, why did we do it? Because, as you know, these things happen for a reason. Just brilliant. All right, then. Just because we do what we want.
Yeah.
Because we're big, hard, monster heel bastards who can do it. But at the same time, we're absolute chicken shits. We'll accept a challenge off anybody except for Kingston and Homicide. Superb.
Brilliant. And like we were saying before, the thing to bear in mind is that these... I'm sure that they're in parts. Some of them have been pre-written and premeditated. I'm sure... Kingston just goes out there and says whatever he wants, and I'm sure some other people will go out there with a sort of general flow of what they're going to say in mind, a slightly more practiced promo, if you like. Either way, this came across really well with the Dawsons. They're very good at it. They've got that kind of, because we're the Dawsons, just that whole mannerism of the way that they pronounce themselves and put themselves forward. I'm really digging, like, they're really good.
They're easy to buy into, you know, the big hard-hitting NWA blokes who will wreck you, and when they say they're going to, you know that they probably will do. Yeah,
you believe them. They're going to smash people up, and you believe it.
Yeah, simple but effective.
One of them looks a lot like Roadkill from ECW days.
Yeah,
funnily enough, the bald one. I know that I know that they're not both bald, as Kingston thinks, but yeah, the bald one with the beard, he looks a lot like Roadkill, man. And I know it's easy to say, well, he's bald and got a beard and he's a big lad, but just the stature and everything about him, it does pat back a little bit to Roadkill. Anyway, moving on nicely to what I thought was a really nice, slightly Fast and Furious video hype for Thunder Rose, who's going to be appearing soon in an NWA ring. I thought it was a fun little promo video, just hyping up her upcoming debut, but already she's got my attention in terms of a bit of a face paint warrior. She's going to kick people's heads in by the sounds of it. Straight into that one. And then that was followed up by an incredibly bizarre, I can't tell whether it was absolute genius or worryingly tragic, promo for Aaron Stevens.
Well, I'm happy to answer that question for you. It was absolutely genius.
It was
superb, absolutely fantastic. That trailer for the Tropical Pirates, his new film. Oh, it was so good. It was so good.
We'll get into, like, I've got a couple of like thoughts a bit later on that I'll get into about that fine line between like a sort of a parody of themselves or, you know, being legitimate 80s themed. This, for me, was that nice fine line on the positive side, if you like. The whole zero eye contact still, keeping that up, keeping the silence scream to the crowd was still genius. The video of the Shuggy boat on the sea, completely doctored. Just that thing where he's staring at a woman's eyes, gives no idea of what the program of the film's about. But not just that whole nonsensical theatrical bit, and then the zoom back to his face, he's like absolutely chuffed with himself.
What I thought was really, really good, and it just shows how self-absorbed he is, which is a brilliant thing for him to get over. And the whole, this show's an hour long, I will wait, when he's trying to get
the line, that's the line
absolute
the
super.
And we have an hour show and I will wait.
I will wait. And then he got that, he heard one person chant Captain Morgan at him, and so his ability to get the rest of the crowd to chant it at him by just highlighting it and wanting that chant about it, he had the audience in the palm of his hand completely. My favourite line of it was Blu-ray, DVD, and in Romania VHS.
VHS,
super,
yeah.
Brilliant.
No, yeah, I agree with you. Funny, it was a cracking little promo. He's going to be on fire, isn't he? He's found his element. He's found his little.
He's in his perfect slot. He's in his absolute perfect spot. He's going to do these comic segments. He's going to be a chicken shit heel. You can see that straight away. But at the same time, he's going to have the fans cheer him, but hate him at the same time. He's got it sussed. He knows exactly what his character's about. And it's, at the moment, because it's still fairly early days, still quite a few generic bits and pieces with the show, but he's one of the few at the moment that knows exactly what his character's about and where it's going and what it is he needs to do with it.
Yeah, I agree fully. He's one of those characters as well that you don't need to sort of force him into any kind of title-related situation at the moment. He can just live off his own crack, if you like. You know, he's like a dollar man, if you like. He doesn't need necessarily a belt at the moment to do anything with. He can just be him for as long as they want to, until they want to pull that trigger.
He is his own storyline, in essence.
Exactly.
It's James Storm last week, he said the belt was a prop, but it's, you know, he doesn't need it. He doesn't need a belt.
He's
his own storyline with whoever he's with. Exactly right. Yeah.
Into a deal of the week to flog some DVDs, Vignette, which was, it's great to see that they're doing discounts, but I thought they missed a trick with that one. I thought they could have had, like, an Austin Idol kind of character doing a whole, get one now, deal of the week kind of, you know, promo. But instead, they just had a tip, like, a graphic on the screen rather than using a wrestler to promote it. Just my honest opinion about that one.
I think it's fair. I mean, everything they've done so far regarding these, you know, the fake advertisements that they've done or whatever, it has always been sort of really, really bigged up, and it might have just been a way to differentiate from the fake advertisements to, all right, this is an actual one, though. So they might just want to keep it a bit more serious.
I get that. I think that they're missing a bit of a trick by doing that, though, personally. I think that they can still ham up the real advertisements for some of their real products now, because they've got stuff to shill, whether it's where, like, events, whether it's the pay-per-view coming up, whether it's DVDs and T-shirt sales, like random merchandise. Getting wrestlers to do that and, like, make it fun and daft and silly rather than the fake ones that I don't really think are needed, because I think the one this week was utter shit, if I'm going to be completely honest. The Spiritual Advisor's Invisible Hair Cream. It was like, it was that when I was talking about earlier on, where it's like a bit of a parody of themselves, just the wrong side of that grey line. I didn't really dig it, to be honest. I thought it was a bit, I thought it was over the top for the sake of trying to be funny, whereas previous weeks it was legitimately funny, some of the stuff that they were doing with Austin Idol and what have you.
I think that's fair.
But getting to Caleb Connolly versus the D-Man, Dan Parker. I thought it was a great, fun match, this.
Yeah, I did as well. And one of the things that struck me with Caleb Connolly when he came out was, I'm sure when I was 13, I created him in creator wrestler mode. I think everybody did. He is the absolute stereotypical creator wrestler, isn't he? He is an absolute core, all
yeah,
over.
Yeah, core, blimey. He had some beastly chops as well, I want to mark out. Like, when he was pushing Dan into the corners and giving him some chops, they were some lovely hard-hitting chops then. Spot on.
I think that's what we were saying before as well, like, you know, comparing it to the women's match, not the hardcore at it, but this is the sort of match that you want to see. You know, it's that hard hitting, really athletic. It was a really great, really good match. It's been one of my favourites so far of the three shows. I think Dan Parker.
Yeah,
he was the Canadian guy. He played a really, really good Weasley heel through it, like really smarmy and what have you. And Caleb Connolly was getting the crowd behind him, and the athleticism behind it was really, really good. You were saying about stiff hits and what have you. There's a line that Connolly said. He says, Connolly has a chop that would knock your penis stiff.
I missed that.
Absolutely genius.
Oh, mate.
So that was cracking. But also there's a bit of background as well that he played in regards to Connolly. He's been in the business for a few years and was a bit of a jobber leading into it. Not the exact words, but that was pretty much the gist of what they were saying. And since then he's developed up a little bit more, maybe got a bit bigger in frame and whatever, because the guy was ripped as well. And through that he's picked up some wins along the way. So it looks like he could be used as maybe one of the jobber to the stars sort of guys, but certainly ahead of the mid card perhaps. And I would buy into him. I thought he was really, really good. And
really
certainly the finish.
Sorry, mate, go ahead, carry on.
I was just gonna say with the finish as well, that springboard moonsault at the finish was lovely. I thought it was a great match overall. I thought it was really, really good.
Agreed. I think one thing that I can take from Caleb was I think that he'd be a great contender, like a sort of underdog to James Storm's title. And I think he could fit into that title picture quite well, where he's like, I can beat you, Storm, I can beat you. And James just comes out and badmouths him, kind of thing. Do you know what I mean? That kind of the Mikey Whipwreck, Steve Austin, ECW style kind of, there's no chance he's going to beat me, but he proves himself week in, week out kind of thing.
Yeah, I can see him having that fight.
Yeah, definitely. I tell you what I did notice from this match. As you say, there was some good technical aerial sort of assaults going on as well at times. But you can tell that both wrestlers, you can tell they've got a thirst for that high-flying aerial assault, if you like, some good, solid technical ring work without being over the top. And it, the way that they were doing it, they were able to sort of bring it down a notch while still looking really good to fit NWA style. If that makes sense. You get the impression that both of them, if they wanted to, they could go at it and both do daft flips here, there and everywhere if they really wanted to do so. But they'd managed to sort of tone it down and get it just right. They found the balance.
It was that sort of, like you say, that style of keeping it grounded, keeping it hard-hitting, keeping it impactful, but still showing what they were able to do athletically. Like I say, with those... with the Hurricane Runners, with the springboard moonsault and what have you, it was really, really crisp, really, really tight. They did well. It was a good match.
By doing so, keeping it meaningful as well as the other thing. Yeah. One thing I did notice in this match, I don't know if it was on everybody's or just on mine, but this was a match when I realised the ring mat, the sound was a bit off this week. I thought it was a bit pingy and echoey. There was a bit of a tin to it, but maybe it was just my stream. I'm not quite sure. I'll have to go back and give it another listen. Following this match, we had Tim Storm coming out in his plain black short sleeve tracksuit. always an interesting look, you know, just from previous weeks. But he came out and completely baby-faced it once again and was brilliant at it, I thought. No matter what he does, you can't help but love him as like a kind of...
He's just a he's an absolute gentleman.
He is.
That's why he's just... It's that likability behind him. And there's even... He's able to, as weird as it sounds, keep it real in the sense of he knows what the score's been leading up to these moments and leading up to this new YouTube show and what have you. You know, he was saying about how that whole £10 of gold sieves and what have you, up until then, he knew what his name value was. He knew what the company's name value was. They weren't high. He was aware of that. And now when you look at the situation that he's in, and it's a bit bittersweet for him because the company is now the biggest it's been in, you know, in a long, 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 long time. And now it's at the point where he's on the absolute wind down in sense of, you know, storyline-wise, he's not in the main event picture anymore in terms of for the big gold belt. Oh, sorry, it's not the big gold belt, but the £10 of gold. He's not in that scene anymore. So for him, as a character, it will be a really, really bittersweet moment. And I think he portrays that so well that so many people feel sorry for him now, but he's still got that likability. He's just such a gentleman. I'm well behind him.
It's because he seems very genuine. He comes across for me, and his age possibly plays a part in this, he comes across like a legitimate 1980s NWA star in the sense of he comes out, you know, well, we had a good match tonight. You know, that kind of just to the point, honest, as you say, no airs or graces, not hamming it up, not sort of playing on anything, just being him. Being genuine is what's getting over.
It's probably a situation where he's as weird as it sounds. His age is probably his strength at the moment now for his character. If he was 20 years younger, even if he was still this sort of respectful for the business and what have you, it wouldn't be half as effective. He's using his age as such a strong selling point for himself now. I'm trying to think of any other character where that's been. I really can't. I think he's done so well with it.
Well, I think part and parcel of that is because of the fact that the storyline makes sense because of his age. Like, as you say, the idea of telling somebody, oh, you're not allowed to wrestle for the belt again when they're in the prime in the 20s doesn't really kind of make sense because you just think, well, clearly he's going to get around that through some loophole or something because what's the point of stopping a 20-odd-year-old from reaching their potential and getting over the fans? Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Whereas with Tim, because of his age, it makes sense and there's a legitimacy to maybe this is actually it for him. Yeah, maybe he's on the wind down now and we aren't going to get one. But obviously the idea being if there is any loophole at some point where he can have one more run, then people will buy it up and absolutely lap it up if it ever comes across. And part of this, we had Eli Drake popping out to do what he does. He tends to come out on shows randomly at the moment. He likes to give random people a bit of a pep talk to get his point across because, you know, he's got a lot to say. So he comes out and gives another pep talk. Is this his gimmick now? I'm not sure. He just comes out, oh, by the way, lads, you know, I just thought I'd come out and have a word. I saw you were having a promo.
He was trying to throw his name in the hat for the bloody world title last week with James Storm. So God, now he's wanting the tag gold. I think he's just trying to, you know, have a little collection going at the moment. It was a nice promo what he did though, and he was saying about him feeling about Tim Storm feeling solemn and what have you, and then basically telling him to keep his head high because he rattled off the previous champions of Ric Flair's, you know, Ricky Steamboat's, Hardy Race's, and Luthers, and said your name's on that list as well. And yeah, that's a cracking bit of praise. It's a great line to have for him as well to get him on side. I thought him coming out and doing that was. It was a nice twist on Eli's character to show that respectful thing because you know when he was in Impact and all that he actually brought it over with him when he was talking to Gally, but that whole dummy thing and what have you, you know, just the name calling them, mocking them, what have you, somewhat disrespectful. But then at the same time when he was addressing Tim Storm, nothing but respect about it. I thought it was really good.
I was in two minds, I'll be very honest. I was kind of 50-50 on it, mainly because I thought Tim was doing a great job without him coming out. If Tim had finished off on that note and said, we'll see what happens next for Tim Storm kind of thing, I could have bought that. But then obviously Eli came out and had his bit of crack on. I still don't know if it was necessarily needed, but then obviously it played into lots of very nice vanity things that you said about him, which was great. But then it played into, so do you fancy making a tag team then? And it was like, oh, right, it makes sense as to why he's come out now. There's an actual purpose to it rather than just popping out to give him a pep talk.
Yeah.
He was like, oh, right, do you want to do a tag team? And then I was like, oh, this is great, this. And then for me, Tim spoiled it a bit by saying, I'll have a think about it.
that was the only thing I would, the negative I would say about it is.
He didn't have to
do that because it's, you know, there's only about, you know, 20 minutes left of the show. There's no real big build up for a big climactic end there for him to come back out as a surprise partner. The show's not long enough to warrant that.
It doesn't
mean that's simply saying there and then. Exactly. Him simply saying there and then, you know what, yeah, I'm in for it, giving him the handshake. That is, you know, it'll pop the crowd. Yeah. The people watch will be like, oh, great, we're going to have a good tag team match tonight then.
They come out together.
That would be fine,
I can see what they were trying to do. It just wasn't warranted, but it was just a bit. It didn't need it, but hey, you know, it wasn't. It didn't deter anything. It just wasn't really needed. You know, we're obviously splitting hairs here a bit. You know, we'll get onto that match shortly, because before that, obviously, we had the Spiritual Advisors Invisible Hair Cream bollocks. No, thank you very much. Josephus then came out. honestly, I mean, this was all levels of I don't know what's going on, but I'm going along for the ride with this. Josephus came out, being Josephus. Then Colt Cabana comes out, taking the piss out of James Storr, dressing up as a cowboy. Josephus thinks, right, well, I'm going to chuck some powder in your face, after giving him the clothes to put on. Then James Storm comes out and super kicks him. He then looks at Cabana, but Ken Anderson comes out to pull him out of harm's way. I mean, personally, I'm not quite sure what to take away from any of that, if I'm honest, about what, who's doing what and why it was happening. But it was just a laugh, really, I suppose.
I don't really know, from what you've said there, I don't really know what to add to it, because I don't know what my opinion is on it, because it was just so... I'm bordering more negative than positive, if I'm being brutally honest. And it's all just questions. Why did Colt Cabana go out in the first place to take the piss out of James Storm? Why, like, there was a thing I read and I couldn't agree more. Do you remember the old 90s sitcoms when, like, the quirky cousin would, like, walk through the door and then the studio audience would, like, laugh and pop because he was there?
Yeah.
That's what happens with Colt Cabana. He pokes his head from around the curtains, like, hey, hello, guys. And then the crowd pop, you know what I mean? Like,
and the fans are like, oh, God, here he is.
Yeah, oh, here he is to wreck the day. There's Thanksgiving ruined again. He's going to put his head in the turkey. Oh, Colt.
So much going to happen here, and the house is going to flood.
What zany antics are you going to get up to now, Colt? And that, to me, is what the only thing of what it could have been. But I didn't get it. I didn't really understand it at all. The medicated foot powder, as Corny said, Corny was the best part of this promo, of this whole segment as well, because then when they were leaving the outside and Cabana still had that stuff in his eyes, you could see in the background Corny getting about the chair and coughing and spluttering and going, the smell, that medicated foot powder. Get it out of my face.
The medicated foot powder. I didn't really understand that. If there, for example, was some kind of payoff for this, where there was an obvious leading to a match, fair enough. I mean, there's obviously something going on between James Storm and Josephus. I just don't understand what anything else had to do with anything. If Josephus had come out dressed as James Storm, taking the piss, going, meh, look at me, what are you going to do? And James Storm had come out and said, what are you doing? And then they had a bit of a scuffle, then I get it. But Colt coming out, don't know. It just seemed like throwing them in there for the sake of throwing them in there.
I think that's exactly what it was. I think that's exactly what it was. I think they just said, okay, we need Colt and Kennedy on the show. Sorry, Anderson on the show. Let's get them in. Let's have them do something. What can we do?
I don't mind the odd bit of daft bollocks like that. Right? I'm quite happy with stuff like that now and again. Just to mix it up a little bit. But as long as, like... when you come away from the segment, you're kind of like, all right, they're heading somewhere, and I kind of understand, but there was I was a bit lost.
Because it's probably now politically incorrect to use midgets. You remember when Shawn Michaels did it with Bret Hart? He had them dress up as a... he had the little person dress up as a Bret Hart and then sort of kept him at arm's distance and what have you. I bet if he was still allowed to do that. they couldn't get that. So
couldn't get Hornswoggle.
Get Cole Cabana. Boom, done.
And I'm happy for him to play that daft ass role. I love him as the zany character. I wouldn't have minded the skit if I knew there was like where we were headed with it afterwards. Like I'm taking from this now. Okay, so you've got Josephus and James Storm who dislike each other. James Storm, who's maybe a bit pissed off with Colt Cabana because he dressed up as him. Ken Anderson there just to save Colt Cabana. We're clearly not going to get any kind of weird tag match out of this because there's no way that James Storm and Josephus are tagging. I don't know. So we'll see. How that goes. Alderson Camille come out to chat with Garley. Bear in mind, Garley's already said, right, everybody, I've been warned by management that I can no longer try and speak to Camille. I am no longer allowed to speak about her silence, and I'm only allowed to speak to Aldis about his championship and the matches ahead. So he speaks to Aldis for about 15 seconds. Hi, Nick, how you doing? By the way, I want to talk to Camille. It was like, right, okay, that earlier section wasn't really required. I think it sums it up from my point of view, from yours, from what I can gather, and from other people's point of views that I've spoken to, that this was just a repeat of last time. It was exactly
the same interview segment.
It didn't add anything. I think the idea that he wasn't allowed to speak to him could have been the differentiator, if you like, the thing that caused the difference between the two promos. I'm not allowed to speak to her, so I warned. Do that, and then maybe just have him look at her as if to say, oh, go on, I dare you, speak, please. But he didn't. He did it exactly after the first 10 seconds. He just went straight into exactly the same promo as the week before.
I think if anything, it made Aldis make Aldis look more like a good guy here, because again, like I said last week, he just portrays himself as such a classy guy. He's such a proper champion, and he rattled off a few names when he was, so basically Garley asking him what, you know, who's in line for the title first and what have you, what's up next. And then he gave, you know, some great words for Tim Storm, what have you. And then he'd even let the audience spout out a couple of names, you know, saying about GM Storm and the like. And then someone said Josephus, and he said, well, we might have to talk about that one, lol.
Yeah.
Then he picked up Ricky Starks as well, pointing out as an up-and-comer, saying that would be his first draft pick. Really, really nice touching, you know, that in itself has probably done more for Ricky Starks than beating Trevor Murdoch the previous week did. Having the champion give him that sort of rub, give him a name call, saying he's my up-and-comer, he's my draft pick and what have you. That's brilliant. Good on him and what have you. The only thing I wasn't a big fan of with Aldis's words, and this, we talked about nitpicking a little bit, and I probably am, but when he said that there probably might not be much competition for him if there isn't in the NWA, that he'd be taking the belt out to other promotions, it just felt like it was a step back in the value of the company. If there's not enough good competition, then I'll go elsewhere. I know what the point of it was, in the sense of, you know, we can take this belt all over the world because there's so many people who are after the title. There's so many people who'd be gunning for me. I'm open to offers from anywhere. Maybe it was just the way it was worded or how I interpreted it. It just sort of made it feel like, oh, the competition might not be good enough for you, so I'll take it all over the place. But I still think he presented himself so, so well when he did it.
I think you're right with the concept of interpretation, slightly how he delivered it. I think if he'd have worded slightly differently, and obviously everybody's going to interpret it slightly differently, I interpreted it as, I open the door to all comers from wherever you may be. And it's almost like a hint, because there's been a lot of chat recently outside of NWA, which I'm not, you know, this is an NWA show, so we won't go too much into it. But there's a lot of other companies that are opening their doors and challenging people left, right and centre from other companies and doing collaboration work and things like that are going on at the moment. So this was kind of, I suppose, if nothing else, in keeping, even though it was pre-recorded from ages ago, it was kind of good time and to say, yeah, we're up for working with anybody as well. And I don't mind that. It kind of opens the door to the idea that any, like, that newcomers might join the NWA that we aren't aware of yet, that might be, you know, solid contenders. I just think that you're correct with the fact that he maybe worded it in a certain way, which could have been worded a bit better, you know, rather than, yeah, you know, it might have come across to some people that if our roster isn't strong enough to defeat me, but I don't think he meant it that way. It's one of them.
No, I don't think he did. Like, yeah, exactly that. So it was just an interpretation, I think.
I'm still not sure I'm thrown with all this, and I like what he's doing. I'm just thrown as to know whether he's a face or a heel at the moment. I can't work it out, because he sort of, every promo he does with Gary, he sort of jumps between one and the other, because that promo about the belt was fantastic. I'll take on all comers, putting over Ricky Starks, putting over the roster, and then the whole shushing of Camille thing. I don't know what to take from it. It's almost making Gary look a bit annoying.
I think it does. I think it makes... He's fascinated by the wrong thing, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a huge fan of Aldis anyway, but I think it does show disrespect for the champion the way that he's doing it. You know, you're meant to be talking. You've already been told off by the committee of the of the NWA.
But he opened up
specifically not to do it.
Exactly. He said that the show at that point.
Exactly, and so he completely disregards that and does it anyway, when he's already had that exact interview the week before. Aldis has already said it has nothing to do with me. She's an insurance policy. She speaks when she wants to speak. Okay, well, I'm just going to rinse and repeat it again. So, you know, piss you. I don't care if you're the champion or not. And Aldis actually said hit the nail on the head. Isn't it funny when people say, I don't want to be disrespectful, but, and then proceed to be massively disrespectful. And that was it. That's exactly what happened. And I think Aldis rinsed him.
Absolutely. From there, we had a weird promo for who is the question mark? I mean, I can't take anything away from that, really. It didn't really do anything for me personally. Then we went into Eli Drake and Tim Storm versus the Dawsons. Shock horror, Tim Storm did accept the invite to become Eli's tag team partner. I mean, I think we all wiped the sweat from our brows on that one. The suspense was killing us for 11 minutes. but thankfully it all came to bloom. I personally believe that this, other than the Storm Aldis match from episode 1, this was, in my opinion, probably the second best match of the series so far. I thought this was a really, really good match, and I think a lot of that credit goes to Eli Drake's in-ring performance in this match.
My first note on this match is Eli is a star. He has when he's going through and, you know, making his comments, you know, he's squaring up to one of the Dawsons. He's like, okay, come on, big man, like, and he says it in a way where, you know, it's tongue in cheek, but.
And he gets battered in the first, you know, he says, come on then, and he gets battered down straight away. Yeah. And then, you know, it's the comeback stuff. And all four guys put on a great tag match here. I think it was really spot on. Interesting that, you know, Tim was the one who got pinned at the second beat, if you like, second defeat in three shows.
I think it was a way that was done well, though.
It was. No, I agree with that. I've got no complaints to make about it at all. I think it was the right person to get pinned, especially if you're putting the Dawsons over as a super strong tag team, and you don't really want to be cutting the legs out from a rising Eli Drake. I'm surprised, I suppose, that they didn't go with a hokey finish, but more credit to them for not going with a hokey finish. You know, Tim took the defeat, and fair play. I think it was a really, really good, solid match that showed a lot off about what everybody was capable of, including the typical Dawson's post-match beatdown that you come to expect within three episodes.
Well, towards the back end of the match, I did miss about 30 seconds of it because I was picking myself up from the floor because I was absolutely pissing myself from another corny quote where he said, Eli Drake is slicker than sperm on a gold tooth. What? I was gone. I was absolutely gone. Why that's what was needed, I have no idea. But I was absolutely pissing myself off that. Then another one he did was, the Dawsons don't know whether to wind their ass or scratch their watch. Brilliant. I love him. Brilliant. I love Carney. He's brilliant.
During the beatdown, Homicide and Kingston running to make the save, as you'd expect, you know, and thankfully, and it was done right, and all that was done really, really well, and applaud them all for it. I thought it was a fantastic match. Everybody came out looking strong. I know Tim got the defeat against him, but, you know, that was the right person to be beaten in that particular match, in my opinion. I hope Tim bounces back, because it's adding to the story as well. He's been beaten by the champion. He's down now. He's been beaten again in a tag match. It plays to that character well about he's been beaten a bit. You know, he needs to shake himself up. He needs to come back and bounce back. What I will say is that bar Aldis and, you know, the other guys we've mentioned who are potentially up-and-comers, the tag division is looking the strongest in the world of wrestling at the moment.
Yeah, it's looking cracking. It's looking really, really good. Certainly, you know, I'm a huge, huge fan of tag divisions in general. I know we weren't going to be touching on many of the promotions, but I think AEW have got a really, really strong one at the moment. But this is either, you know, this is up there or close to, but it's such an even playing field as well. We said this last week, and I'm hoping for a few more weeks they do have a Tim Storm, Eli Drake consistency with it. Eli doesn't need to be straight in that world title picture just yet. And I think there's stories can be developed between Eli and Tim, even if it involves an Eli heel turn on him. And no, just to get some mileage out of that. You know, I could make Eli an absolute bastard of a heel if he turns badly on the Tim Storm, who we've said 2 weeks in a row now how much of a gentleman he is and how much of a following he has now, how everybody loves him. If someone was to befriend him and turn heel on him, they are public enemy number one in that company. So I think it should be Eli anyway. I think he would suit that to the ground.
Yeah, I agree completely. I mean, what have we got here? We've got next week's show, and then am I right in thinking it's the week after the pay-per-view? It's definitely the middle of November, I know that much. It's going to be interesting because, it'll be interesting to see how they do this, because I don't know. Bear in mind that the shows that we're watching are pre-recorded, yeah? So they've been pre-recorded and we're seeing them as they are. Now, what I don't know is whether or not they are doing live shows and the storyline's continuing and we're behind, obviously, or whether the pay-per-view is a full-on kind of, you know, a follow-up exactly in line with the TV tapings. Because if so, they need to be quick about finding out who's going to be the title contender for Nicaldis in 2 to 3 weeks.
I think there is rumour about him and Cody going at it again for a little bit. Now, I don't know if that's going to be on an NWA show or not. I've heard, and again, it's nothing more than rumours, but they've been promoting a little bit on the YouTube channel about, you know, about him and Cody in their previous match and what have you. Yeah. So there probably is, you know, no smoke without fire with it, but yeah, I could probably see that. That's probably maybe why they've opened up that invitation and Aldis made that comment that he did. So I could maybe see Aldis and Cody rematch.
I can see that too, man. I can see that too. Any final words or thoughts about the show or what you're hoping to happen next week or anything along those lines before we wrap it up?
Well, there was an interesting thing. I've been just looking at the YouTube numbers on it. Now, obviously, we'll take episode one. Is, you know, it's an episode one, bang, boot, inflated numbers, what have you. But that's done 492,000 views so far at the time of recording this. 492,000 views on episode one.
Yeah.
Episode two, 275,000 views. Mm-hmm. Episode three, bearing in mind with 21 hours of time out of it, has done over 100,000 views already.
Wow, so they're getting the... They're getting the live crowd and the quick follow-up crowd in straight away. People want to watch it in the first 24 hours.
Now, I would say
solid numbers.
Three. Yeah, that would be brilliant. I would say episode three is when you would start to see your stability there. You know, you have episode two is your wind down from episode one. So you still maybe have that level of inflation there. Episode three is probably when you start looking at what your benchmark is. And they've already hit over 100K. They've done phenomenally well.
They have, and it'll be interesting to sort of review that maybe next week to see what the viewing figures are by the time the episode four comes up. And as you see, you can use it as a bit of a benchmark to where things might be going. I know a few people are a little bit down on this episode following the first two. Personally, I think that's a little bit harsh because I think there was more good than bad in this episode. Absolutely there was, as far as I'm concerned. I think that the honeymoon period's over, as far as I'm concerned, and that's good because now it's a case of, yes, I do like this product. I'm not just buzzing about the fact, oh, they're 80s, oh, they're in a studio. That is still fun, but that's not the be-all and end-all of it. Now I'm actually getting into finding out what it's all about. The criticisms that I've made tonight, if you want to call them criticisms, personally, I'm massively keeping in mind that we're on episode three. I've got nothing to base. So it's episode three. There are a handful of things that didn't float my boat. I think the things that can easily be rectified they might have floated other people's boats, and more power to them if they did. I think there's the things that I've pointed out tonight are things that for me could easily be fixed. Even simple things like where, you know, I was a bit down in the women's match there, and it was purely because I don't think it was TV ready personally, that particular match. Bearing in mind the previous week, the women's match that was on that week, I personally believe that that's in the top three matches that's been in the series so far. I really do. I think it comes third only to the tag team match this week in the initial Storm Aldis match in week one. I think it was a really solid match. I think this is an opening match. They need to be a bit, you know, just get it out there and see if it's two trainees going at it, then so be it. They might not be, and if they're not, then they really need to think about what the quality of the matches they're putting on the TV, because they've had plenty of time to edit. You know,
I think they've had for this show here, they had three matches. I think two of them were complete hits. The Caleb Connolly match and the Caleb Connolly Dan Park match was brilliant. I'd probably argue it was better than the tag team main event.
Fair play.
But I thought the tag team main event was brilliant, and to me, it would be a case of main event from week one of Tim Storm Aldis and these two matches in any order of two and three.
There are a couple of other matches as well that have happened in the first couple of weeks. I think basically what we've got is that first match that from series one, that Tim Storm and Aldis match from series episode one, even. That's your benchmark. It has to be. And it's going to be very difficult to beat that because of what's been part, you know, the build up to it. It's difficult to beat that. Yep. But there's a hell of a. It's not like an obvious two and three and four. There's several matches that are really good contenders. If you know, if they ever make a sort of best of season one DVD, they're laughing so far because there's plenty to pick from. And as you say, it's majority of the time, it's, you know, two out of three is very good or ain't bad, as certain people would say. I think it's been a really good show, and if 80% of your shows are hit, then bring it on. I think that's
absolutely
awesome.
The one thing, I can't remember if it was something that we spoke about off recording or if it was touched on it last week, but I would like to see during the week a build up of it's just been announced that so-and-so are going to go at it on Power Episode 4. Just something to look forward to, because at the moment it doesn't feel like we've got any of that. It doesn't have to be the whole card, just one match, just one segment. Or Aldis is going to be on next week. He's going to address Garley this time, though. He's going to, you know, he's putting in a formal complaint to Garley. You'll see what happens, see the fallout of that. You know, just a little bit of that, just to get you in. It is nice sometimes to have a conclusion to an episode, and I think they had that on this one, where you know, Aldis and Eli were then checking on Tim Storm, and it closed off with that. It felt like there was a little bit of a conclusion there. Yep. It did leave you hanging a little bit because Eddie Kingston, Homicide, and the Dawsons left brawling out and what have you. Mm-hmm. But I do want to see, I want to see an episode end where you go, holy shit, what's going to happen next week?
Yeah.
And I don't think we've had it just yet, and you know, for obvious reasons. You know, episode one, you still get familiar with the product. Episode two, you still get familiar with the product. Now's the time that they should just be laying those seeds a little bit, just to whet the appetite for the week ahead, and just get you really hooked on it. But from where we are now, compared to where we were 4 or 5 weeks ago, with the variation in wrestling that we have at the moment, we're absolutely laughing. It's a brilliant time at the moment.
We are indeed, mate. Well, thank you very much for joining me once again. I'm sure we'll be doing it next week, hopefully. On top of that, if you want to check out some other bits and pieces that we're doing at the moment on bbgwrestling.com, we've got interviews with legends such as Ahmed Johnson, with legends such as Sid Vicious, with Austin Idol, who's a part of the NWA show, obviously, and many, many others. You can go and check those out on bbgwrestling.com. Also on Twitter, at bbgwrestling, at Grapple Arcade, and at bbgwpod. You can check out everything that we're doing, all the competitions that we run, free to enter competitions, lots of prizes to be won, lots of bits and bobs going on Twitter and social media in general. So thank you very much for joining us, and we'll catch you for episode 4. Take it easy.